It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Oh, good morning, everybody. A happy Monday to you. I'm Kyle Madsen. He's James Hamm. You know, I whined last week about people trying to force the fall season.
Yeah.
Specifically Starbucks. Just welcome to our fall launch on August 22nd or whatever.
Like, I thought you were more opining than whining, but go ahead.
Okay. I opined that people are trying to force the fall season.
That's right.
But then this weekend hit, and I got to tell you, the weather was out in the part of the Bay Area where I live. The weather was beautiful. Oh. I think we had a high of 78 on Friday and a high of 79 on Saturday. And then yesterday, I don't think it got higher than the mid-80s.
Oh, we got rained on Saturday.
Brutal. Brutal. I had windows open. I had college football on Saturday, Florida State and Georgia Tech. And now we're one more Sunday without football until football every Sunday until February.
That's right.
It feels like fall. It felt like fall. I know it's not, because it's going to be hotter today and it's going to be hotter throughout this week. And I can't comfortably wear a hoodie all day yet, which means it's not fall. But this weekend really felt like it.
I have chosen to switch straight to hoodie weather.
You did. You just jumped right in feet first.
I even wore pants today. I haven't worn pants, like I've worn shorts, but I haven't worn pants.
Long pants.
In a long time.
James wears pants to work, everybody. I want people to know that. He doesn't just roll up no pants on. They're just shorts.
Pantsless, yeah. I wear shorts. I don't know. We had weird weather on Saturday. It was pouring when we woke up.
And it's like, oh,
this is weird. And it was rainy like half the day. And then, you know, it started to clear up. But either way, it's like, hey, kind of in sweatshirt mode. And then...
I have to respect it.
Then I threw on a sweatshirt, went to Domantas Sabonis' camp on Sunday, and just cooked. Just like, oh my gosh, what have I done?
It's too hot.
Why God have you forsaken me?
Were you just moving around?
Oh, it was just hot.
In the gym?
In the gym.
Outside?
Inside. It was inside at Hardwood Palace.
Uh-huh.
But there were a lot of people there, and you're moving around, you're working, and it was hot. I'm like, oh, I made a mistake.
So when you go to a player's, I just want to talk mechanics of journalism here for a second. We can get to what Domas actually said. When you go to a player's youth camp, is there a designated time? Hey, Domas will be available for interviews at noon, and you show up at 11:30, or is it you show up when camp starts and you stand around like you're watching practice when actually it's a youth camp?
Yeah, you get a lot more like on the ground than you would at a normal practice. Like, you're allowed in the gym. They've got a little thing there that says, hey, just so you know, your kids will be recorded. Whoever's in the gym will be recorded potentially as, you know, B-roll for local news. So we don't have to go around and find every single parent to every kid that we have in a video and say, hey, we need you to sign a release. So there's a blanket release.
Right.
So you usually get like a window of 15 minutes, 20 minutes of B-roll. And then, you know, the player comes over and does like a you know, maybe 10 minutes of media.
It's a little press scrum.
Yeah, a little media scrum. And it's usually about, you know, you start off with what they're doing at the camp. You know, a guy like Sabonis is the first camp he's ever had.
Yeah, I was wondering about that too, because I feel like this wasn't a thing last year.
No, it wasn't a thing. So Fox has had a camp a couple of years. Monk had a camp this year. You know, to be honest with you, the players, they should do more camps. But we're coming out of COVID, so I know a lot of that stuff was shut down for a while. I'll say this for whatever people think about DeMarcus Cousins, good, bad. His camps were always the best. Not only did he have incredible camps, but he paid for huge amounts of campers from underprivileged areas to come to his camp. He also had VSP there doing vision checks on all of the kids as part of the camp.
Love it.
Paying for glasses for kids who couldn't afford glasses. Absolutely spectacular. I think the guys now, they're just getting back into it. And again, Sabonis has been in the league, what, 7-8 years? He's never been able to have a camp. And,
yeah. And he's bounced around so much, too.
Yeah. Well, that, and he's a player's son, so he grew up going to camps. And those are the guys that you expect to, like, do these things. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of the players, you know, like Fox, or like, they went to Jordan camp, or they went to Kobe mm-hmm. camp, whatever, when they were young. But those are, like, really expensive, you mm-hmm. know, a lot of these camps. And so, I don't know. I thought it was a really, really good atmosphere. You could tell it was his first camp. He mm-hmm. was kind of walking around, like, not knowing what to do. And then he settled in. And like,
Yeah.
Actually, there was a moment early on with him where I could see he was kind of, like, uncomfortable. You know, he has little kids, but these kids are a little bit older. Not there mm-hmm. was probably 4 or 5 year olds. And then
good
all the
Lord.
Way up to, like, probably, like, 12, maybe a little bit older. Anyway, there was this little girl who couldn't make it up to the basket. And instead of, like, reaching down and picking her up and, you know, having her dunk or something,
mm-hmm.
he actually had her pass him the ball, and he dunked in front of everyone for the first time. And everyone, like, got all excited because Sabonis dunked. So I think it was kind of like that moment where he started to, like, settle in a little mm-hmm. bit and, like, okay, I got this, and kind of relax.
I love the idea that instead of doing the typical thing where you pick the kid up and have him dunk, Domas is like, okay, I'm going to do a dribble handoff with you.
Yeah,
THM. Here, you take, I'm going to set the screen. Here, kid, you come running right, and you're just going to get leveled.
Pocket pass. Pocket pass.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So you got to chat for a few minutes with Domas.
Yeah.
And anytime you get to chat with a player during the offseason, that's a fun thing. Find out what they're up to. Get their thoughts on what's been going on. What was the, I know there were several takeaways, but what was the big takeaway from you talking with Domas?
He had a couple of things. Number one, he was very clear. He thought Malik Monk was gone.
That was shocking that he said that.
It was shocking too, because he had lobbied so hard and was like, even like had made like veiled threats to Malik, like, hey bro, you better be back, you know, like exit interview stuff. And like during the season, mm-hmm. late in the season. But I think they're, like, if you go back and you watch, like, the look on De'Aaron Fox's face, the look on Domantas Sabonis' face, I think you get the understanding that, like, they thought he was leaving.
That was my take.
Yeah, yeah. So, he was very excited to have him back. You know, sort of, like, the awkwardness of potentially losing somebody that you know means so much. And then not knowing what's going to happen. The other thing was, you know, we did talk to him about he's been working out this last week in L.A. with DeMar DeRozan, mm-hmm. With Boogie Ellis, and then Kevin Herter showed up. Leandro Barbosa and Doug Christie have been there working with them.
Yeah.
So he's been doing that, really getting to know not just DeMar DeRozan, the person, but DeMar DeRozan, the player, and mm-hmm. how to play off of him, which I think is, like, super, super important.
Yeah.
I don't know where they're working out, but they've got, you know, everyone's got ties down in L.A.
Yeah. From what I understand, it's not hard to find an open gym somewhere in L.A.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I mean, I think there are a lot of them. And Sabonis has had a house down in the L.A. area for a long time. And
mm-hmm.
and Doug, you know, spends a lot of time down there. So I'm sure they're between Pepperdine and some of the other places. Even Boogie Ellis, you know, was at USC last year.
Yeah.
So they've been working out. He said Kevin Herter looks great. He looks like he's in great shape. He's hitting his shot. He looks very confident. So he said that. But also, I thought it was interesting. He started to go off on the DeRozan situation a little bit. And that's what I like about Sabonis is, like, there are a lot of times where he's super brief with his answers, but if you're really listening to him, you can understand that he sometimes says things a little too honest. And he said, yeah, he, you know, when DeRozan signed, you know, he was excited, but he said nothing was following through. So he was getting frustrated with the lack of signing players at that point. And I think for him, he really, like, okay, we got somebody. And I think Fox is probably feeling the same way. And I this was a big moment for them, because mm-hmm. I think that they kind of sensed like the offseason was slipping away a little bit, and nothing that they had heard about or knew about was actually going to work out. And so, you know, there was a little bit of a panic mode for some of these players who, you know, when you sign a long-term extension with a franchise, you do so with the understanding that they're going to build around you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's always that sort of issue in Sacramento. Like, you can't really usually land free agents, mm-hmm. and like, what's going to happen? It was a good moment.
When we talked about this last year, I was taking notes while you're writing, because there's a lot in there that I want to crack open. But also, roster cuts in the NFL are due tomorrow at 1 p.m., so those are starting to trickle out. If anything major happens with the 49ers or the Raiders, we'll let you know.
Cool.
That's what's happening so far. Matt Breida got released earlier today, according to ESPN's Jeremy Fowler. But we'll have all that for you as well. But back to the Domas camp. One of the things we talked about a lot last year was how it's probably difficult for Domas and Malik and De'Aaron Fox and maybe a handful of others to kind of look down the bench as they went into January, February last year, going, hey, this didn't cut it last year. It's not cutting it this year. We need to get better in X, Y, and Z places. Not anything personal against our teammates, but I think reality of the situation, it set in for all of us who were observing the team. I promise that people on the team saw the same things we saw.
Yeah.
And probably more. So I can imagine that frustration that we felt as fans sitting here going, hey, are they going to do anything? Like, what? Clock's ticking. Like, okay, the patience is great, but like, step on it. Here's all these other teams making all these moves. I imagine the players on the team, specifically the leaders like Domas and like De'Aaron.
Oh yeah.
And Malik once he re-signed, are looking and having the same questions. So I imagine the sense of relief. I mean, we did a whole 6 hours of programming about DeMar DeRozan the day they landed him. I imagine the celebration internally for players like Domas was probably pretty similar.
Oh no, I totally agree. And again, when you're Domas and, you know, going into last season, he renegotiated and extended his contract, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden he's in Sacramento for 24, 25, 26, and 27 and 28. Mm-hmm. Like, he's committed for the next 4 years.
Yeah.
But then you also have this other guy that you expect to be sort of your, he might be Batman and you might be Robin, or you might, you know, mm-hmm. both be Batman in this, yeah. whatever. But Fox is only under contract for the next 2 years. And there's always in the back of your head, like, what if something goes wrong here and De'Aaron goes, okay, it's time. Like, I've been mm-hmm. here too long. Like, mm-hmm. De'Aaron Fox, I think there's a possibility this season will become the all-time leader in games played for the Sacramento Kings.
That's wild.
He will surpass Jason Thompson as the Kings' all-time leader in games played. And so there's this weird possibility that he'll do that this year. But you know, again, if you're not winning, there comes a point where a player hits, you know, he's 26, he'll be 27 in December. And Fox has got to look around and say, okay, is this it? Is this, mm-hmm. are we doing more? Am I going to be able to, can I play the next 8 years here and, you know, go off mm-hmm. into the sunset as a 35-year-old who played, you know, his entire career as a Sacramento King? Or do I need to, you know, mm-hmm. force my way out?
Sure.
Which is totally possible.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you want to be in a situation where you're adding and where you're bringing mm-hmm. in a star in DeMar DeRozan, mm-hmm. even if, you know, like, he is at an advanced age. He's 35 years old now. That doesn't matter. You still want to feel like you're moving the right direction. So
yeah, and going into a season knowing that the team has picked a lane.
Yeah,
it's not, yeah, hey, just going to kind of run it back and we'll see what's happening at the trade deadline. Mm. Like, no, man, they picked a path and now they're on it. That's at least, at the very least, I think that's invigorating. Whether that translates into a 50-win team or a 55-win team or a 48-win team, couldn't tell you. But at least it's something different.
Yeah.
And it hadn't even occurred to me that that somebody like Domas, because he and the rest of the team was going to, no matter what happened this offseason, they were going to show up at camp and they were going to go to work and they were going to try and win every single game and they were going to try and win a championship.
Yep.
That was going to happen no matter what. But hearing somebody like Domas, who's, you know, not out there super vocal, you know, hearing him go, yeah, it was getting frustrated. It's like, man, I didn't even consider that. Like, that's crazy.
Well, I hope that he was voicing the frustration.
I imagine he was.
Yeah. And I think he's
money.
Also,
I'm frustrated.
I think he's also in the room, like not physically, but like I, sure. I think that like him and Fox, they're at least like bouncing ideas off him.
Mm-hmm. I think you have to now, not that because you don't want the like, LeBron James is kind of the poster child now for the bad player GM.
Oh yeah,
the guy who's pulling all the strings. I think you have to. You don't necessarily want that where you have one player dictating everything your team is doing.
No.
But on the other hand, you can't just ignore your star players when it comes to making those moves. So yeah, I'd be shocked if Fox and Sabonis and maybe even Monk weren't at least consulted or looped in.
Yeah.
What's the phrasing I'm looking for?
Maybe they have a group text.
Yeah, like, maybe just like DeMar DeRozan ? From Monty.
Yeah.
A bunch of thumbs up on it. Yeah, I think you just have to consider, or at least to me, make your star player feel like, or players feel like they're involved in this process.
No, I think so too. And Fox has always been a player who's kind of like hands off.
Mm-hmm.
But not really. Like he acts like he's hands off. And I don't think he's in there like forcing.
Right.
But he also... Like they know that they need to tell him things.
Yeah.
And they know things.
Mm-hmm.
All the time. Like the Foxes, they know what's happening.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting that we're actually getting to a point where maybe they're building something that looks like super sustainable for at least the next couple of years.
Yeah.
And it's something that you had to do at some point.
Yeah.
And you can't just look at this like 3-year window because Fox is out of contract during that 3 years. You need to keep adding. You need to keep you need to make sure that this is the right place for him and that you can prove that this is the right place for him.
The other thing Domas said that was I thought kind of the biggest takeaway, and you said as much, is that he was surprised that Malik Monk came back, and he said that they had kind of gotten the idea. He said, I talked to him all last year, and I kind of got the idea that he was out of here.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting to me because it felt like there were two ways that was going to go. It was either Malik was going to go chase a bag somewhere and forego all the other benefits of coming back to Sacramento. That was just going to go out the window. He was going to go where the money was. But it given when he signed and the fact that we know that he turned down more money from other places, I'd be interested to know if there was some kind of change of heart from Malik or if the money just didn't come from teams he thought it would come from, where he would have chased it with Orlando or Philly, but maybe it came from Charlotte and Detroit and he went, no thanks. Or was that just throughout the year he was like, yeah, I might go, I might not. I'm going to keep my options open and just played it that way. I would love to know.
Yeah. I would love to. I think, like, first of all, he is a player that, like, he found his NBA home. You're on the clock.
I'm on the clock. I got a fantasy draft going on right now.
You're on the clock. So he is a player who, you know, has been searching for his NBA home. That's always been a problem it's a problem with a lot of players. I mean, again, it's why Trey Lyles was so... Like he was so clear and like, hey, I want to be here.
Mm-hmm.
But with Monk specifically, you knew he's going to get a lot of money, and you thought he might even get way more than he actually got.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's this certain level with the players where, like, they want someone to come back, and they can't wait to continue the relationship, and they want the team to get better, and they're growing something together, but. There's also like this really clear line where every player goes, but I also want you to get yours.
Mm-hmm.
Go get your bag. Like, I don't care. If you got to leave us, you got to leave us because that's the world we live in. You need to make sure you go get your money.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Fox specifically was so clear on this. Like, mm-hmm. I'd love to have him back, but I got to be honest. He's my friend, and I want my friend to be financially set for the rest of his life. More than that,
I want to see the homies get paid.
And I totally, it's a really interesting dynamic because most people wouldn't understand it if from the outside it's like, hey man, like come back, you know, give up a little bit of money. It's like, well, you didn't give up any money. So why should I have to give up any money?
Right.
Like you and Domas just got you got paid.
Yeah. Darren's got an extension coming up.
Yeah. Like there's a Brinks truck that shows up to your house like 12 times a year. That's gigantic.
In fact, Darren could have already signed an extension, but he didn't.
Yes.
In hopes of getting, wait for it, more money.
Yes. If Fox makes all NBA, he goes from potential making like 25% of the salary cap to making 30% of the salary cap.
Right.
Like, and that's so much money. Like people who aren't paying attention to how much money he already makes, the difference in 5% is astronomical when you're making $35 or $40 million. Yeah.
So, I will take 5% of $35 million right now.
Yeah.
I'd be happy to do that.
Yeah. And then the
175,000?
No,
that's
1.75 million.
Yes, there we go. I was off by a decimal.
Yeah. So, and that's like, and it keeps going up, right? So, so every year, you know, you're going to make more and more money. So again, if it's a $40 million starting salary and it's 5%,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's $2 million starting salary that goes up and up and up and up over the course of you know, a 4-year deal or 5-year deal. Plus the other kicker is if you make all NBA, you're eligible for the Supermax, which means that in the NBA right now, you can only sign, if you have 1 year left on your deal, you can sign a 4-year extension.
Mm-hmm.
You can only be under contract for 5 years under standard NBA contract. And if you're a free agent, you can only sign a 4-year deal with a new team, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're a Supermax player, you can sign you can be under contract with the team you're on for up to 6.
Okay.
So it's the year that's coming up and then your 5-year extension on top of that. And what people need to look at is the final year. The final year is astronomical.
Yeah.
How much money they can make in that final year.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that final year for these guys might be a 31, 32-year-old season where someone will be like, man, I don't know if I want to pay $70 million, but oh, he's a Supermax, so we've got to do it.
Yeah.
And that's where, like, Fox, if he makes All NBA this year, he's very motivated to make All NBA.
Yeah.
Yeah. He makes All NBA. He gets this massive, massive payday, which is crazy.
Do you think DeMar DeRozan being on the team helps or hurts his chances to make All NBA? I think it hurts it.
I keep saying this, and people will probably get annoyed with me saying it, but like, the top 19 players made the all in scoring made the all-star team except for De'Aaron Fox, who was 10th.
Right.
He finished 8th, and at the time he was 9th or 10th at the all-star break. He finished the season 8th in scoring, and the list of people below him is just stunning.
It's a bunch of All-NBA guys.
I mean, everyone wants to talk about Anthony Edwards, how he's so incredible. In his fourth year, you know, he's not that far behind De'Aaron Fox.
Mm-hmm.
De'Aaron Fox scored more points per game than Anthony Edwards. Mm-hmm. You know, he also led the league in steals. So he's not getting that type of respect that you would expect for a player who's averaging that. So I think my point is that if there's one thing that you worry about hurting De'Aaron, it would be the scoring. But scoring is proven to not be the end-all be-all for Fox when it comes to making an all-star team or making all NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. He went up. He was better than he was a year before. He averaged, 25.3 a game. 1 year makes third team all NBA. The next year he averages 26.4, whatever it is, 26.6, and doesn't make all NBA. It really does come down to one thing, and that's winning. And so if the Kings win and Fox averages 24 or 25 points per game and takes a little bit of a step back because of the presence of DeMar DeRozan, I think people are going to still give him the benefit of the doubt, and he will take that next step up into All-NBA status.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it has more to do with winning than anything.
Yeah.
The Kings were, he was 25-4-6 when he was third team All-NBA in 22-23. And that was the year the Kings were the 3 seed. Mm-hmm. Last year, they were 2 fewer wins and his stats got better and he did not make All-NBA. They're going to have to win. But also his stats are going to have to me, go up or stay about where they are. And that's where I wonder if the Kings get exponentially better, if they're a 50-win team.
Yeah.
Is it going to be, is the narrative going to be, because that's so much of what this is the narrative going to be, wow, look at De'Aaron Fox leading that team? Or is it going to be, wow, look at DeMar DeRozan helping get that team over the hump? That's where I kind of wonder, because we talked a lot last week about how there's a lot of people that aren't doing deep dives on these type of things. They're going to look at very specific narratives, who won the season, who Anthony Edwards last year was one of the winners of the season because everybody loves Ant.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of what it is.
It's really weird how certain players are viewed by a lens and others aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but how you can be viewed under one lens one year and then never viewed that way again. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, he's incredible. And it's like, okay, he was better. And then you didn't recognize him as if he was incredible. It's like, oh, well, his team didn't win as many games. It's like, okay, well, he finished below Steph Curry's team finished below him in the standings, and Steph finished below him in points per game and wasn't nearly the defensive player and all of the, you know, the other stats, but you gave him the benefit. So there is this weird give and take when it comes to, like, who it is. And I was wrong. It's max money is 35% of the salary cap. It's not 30. So it's a jump between 30 and 35% if you're max money. And then I think we all know where the salary cap is going, but, you know, this next season, it's going to go from, 142, it's jumping to something like 156, and then into the 170s. So we're looking at 2 years from now when his contract is up, and if you figure $170 million as a cap.
I just got a text from my FBI agent, by the way, that heard you besmirch the name of American hero Stephen Curry.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to let you know they're listening.
That's what his first year salary
$59.5 million
could look like.
I would take that.
If the salary cap jumps to 170 and he jumps to all NBA, he could get a deal starting at just about $60 million bucks. Goes up 8% a year. And you're talking about that fifth year that we talked, you know, that we mentioned earlier. So all of a sudden that fifth, I don't even want to do the math.
This is why De'Aaron Fox is advocating for Malik Monk to go get his money, because De'Aaron Fox is doing the same thing.
Yeah, go get your money, because Fox is going to go get his money too.
Alas, Malik Monk staying with the Kings surprised us, surprised Domantas Sabonis. And we will continue discussing takeaways from Domantas Sabonis' camp. You said a couple of things when you were kind of rolling through what he said. They really jumped out to me. We'll get to that. We'll let you know what's happening with NFL Cutdown Day. And I have a fantasy draft happening right now, and I'm on the clock. So I got to figure out who I'm going to pick. We'll tell you who it is next. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insiders, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. We're hanging out with you till noon on ESPN 1320. It's Sacramento Sports Leader. Voice guy, help me.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
I have to push a button to make sure that our little intro, if you're watching on the stream on youtube.com/ESPN1320 or twitch.tv/ESPN1320, if you're watching on the stream, you don't hear the little intro music. But if you're listening on the radio, you do hear the intro music. Well, to have that intro music record, I have to push a certain button. And I had pushed that button a while ago.
Okay.
And then as the song started, I pushed the button again and turned it off.
Oh, no.
So I didn't record the first part of the intro. It's fine. Like, it's fine. It's not a big deal.
Okay.
That's just one of those frustrating things that, like, it doesn't matter, but it irks me. Like, I'm mad right now.
I know. You get frustrated about things that I, like, technically have no idea how.
Like, this doesn't matter. Like, if you can see it.
I see it.
Do you see this little blank spot right here? Like, I am going to have to go in and cut that out now, because then it'll sound bad on the podcast, because there will be a bunch of just seconds of nothing. So, like I said, very minimal thing. It's going to take me 6 seconds to fix. I'm just annoyed that I did that.
Yeah.
You know?
I do.
Fingers crossed.
I feel your pain.
Hopefully someone will do this for me someday. I'm still deciding who to pick in my fantasy draft. I'm up in my dynasty league.
Oh,
The homie Luke Easterling, who's in the chatty house right now.
Yeah.
Live from wherever. I think he's in somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. He's in the chatty house now awaiting my pick. I haven't decided yet. I'm hemming and I'm hawing.
Okay. So who was picked, with the last two picks?
So far, Marvin Harrison Jr. went number one overall
Okay.
in our draft. Let me see. I'm in the picks only chat. There we go. Marvin Harrison Jr. went first. Malik Nabers went second.
Mm-hmm.
Luke, who wheels and deals all out. I would be sitting there at 11 p.m. on a Tuesday night in June. And I get a text from Luke that's like, hey, Trevor Lawrence for your first round pick. Like, no.
is he a legit like wheeler and dealer?
Oh, yeah. No, it's legit.
But he's not one of those guys that just gives you bad trades the whole time?
No. It's trades you have to think about.
Okay, cool.
I've
played in leagues with guys who like...
Oh, it's the worst.
...think they're getting over on everyone, and then they get all angry. How come no one trades in this league? It's like, because all of your trades are just horrific.
Right.
No one would ever do any of the trades that you offer them.
Right. You're asking for a first-round pick for a backup tight end.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely not.
And then when I counter your trade... Just because your dude caught three touchdowns for the one time he's ever going to catch three touchdowns and you're trying to cash in, when I counter it, you always blow me off.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you don't want to do trades. Like, yeah, I just want to do trades that are fair.
Luke said I would never dishonor my boys like that. See? That's why he's the homie.
Good for
you. There's sometimes where somebody will ask about a trade where it's a fair trade, but it's like it's with a player I'm not interested in letting go.
Okay.
So I just, like, somebody offered me a trade for Dalton Kincaid this morning, a tight end for the Bills, my first round pick from last year. Like, no, I'm hanging on to him. I just don't want to move him. I'm a big fan.
Okay.
Someone asked if you have to take a rookie or anybody available on waivers, but our teams are like 30 players deep.
Oh, yeah.
So they're just, anybody who's on waivers right now is probably not worth
having. It's not very good.
Having.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm limiting myself to rookies here.
Okay, so you had Harrison and Nabers.
Harrison, Nabers, Rome Odunze, and Brock Bowers went 3-4 to Luke. Caleb Williams was the fifth overall pick, Bears quarterback. Sixth overall, the pick right ahead of me, the guy took Jonathan Brooks, the rookie running back from the University of Texas, who went to Carolina. He's recovering from a torn ACL.
Oh.
So that's an interesting pick. My team could use some running backs.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to reach for one here. I'm deciding between two receivers.
Okay.
And a quarterback. I'm deciding between Xavier Worthy from the Chiefs or Ladd McConkey from the Chargers. I'm a big Ladd guy. We talked about him quite a bit on this show.
Yeah.
Or Jaden Daniels, the Commanders quarterback.
I mean, that's tough.
It's really tough. They're three good players, I think.
Yeah, and I think we all know that there's a possibility that Jaden Daniels could get like a big boost here. Mm-hmm. There's an outside shot.
Yeah.
If there's some way that they make a trade with the 49ers for Brandon Ayuk.
We'll get to that.
Who was, of course, his running mate.
No update.
No update.
By the way.
No update. I think I'm going to take Worthy.
That's where I'm leaning right now. I've reached out to some people who know things.
Yeah.
Just to get some confirmation on like, hey, this is what I kind of saw in the preseason. This is what I read. Just wanted to see.
You need to put a dollar in the jar. Did you reach out to Faraz Siddiqui?
No, I did not reach out to Faraz. I did not hit Faraz.
That'd be amazing. Hey, Faraz, I got this deal. It's like, man, I got 2,000 fantasy teams. I don't have time for you, Kyle.
I'm not going to make the pick yet. Sorry, Luke.
That's right.
Amazing. Oh, Chatty House weighing in. Huh? Ramsey wants me to draft Jaden Daniels. He's a former Sun Devil.
Oh, all right.
No chance.
No.
All right. Let's get back to the Domas stuff real quick. I do want to put a pin in the Brandon Ayuk Commanders thing.
Of course.
Domas said another interesting thing, and this is one of those things that this is why I think it's very valuable having a level-headed person such as yourself on this program, because when Domas says that, because he's been working with DeMar DeRozan, and he said something to the effect of the Kings are going to have to learn how to play around DeRozan.
Yeah.
That is a... Not anything crazy. That's a minor red flag for me. Because I thought the whole thing was DeMar DeRozan fitting in with the Kings, not the Kings stopping what they're doing to make sure that DeMar DeRozan can do what DeMar DeRozan does.
Well, I think with Domas, he prefaced that conversation with that DeRozan does something unique at a Hall of Fame level.
Sure.
And so it's within the best interest of the team to figure out how to play with that within their system. Like, that's what, like, this might not be a seamless fit. Like, mm-hmm. everyone keeps talking about, oh, again, his basketball IQ is off the charts. It's going to mm-hmm. be a seamless fit. It's like, okay, well, if it's a seamless fit, like, there are other locations that, that DeMar DeRozan's gone where they just haven't won.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like the Bulls were successful the last 3 years while he was there. They weren't. They weren't mm-hmm. highly successful, and they had a lot of talent. That can be coaching. It can be the wrong mix of players. It can be, you know, players not accepting roles. Or like, there's all kinds of reasons why that can happen. So, yeah, you need to figure out how to work within a system. And the Kings play a very specific system, but I think you also need a system buster. Like, Malik Monk is a bit of a system buster, right? But not really. Malik Monk does what he does within the Kings system. And that's something that I appreciate. He does. Like, I always considered, like, Bobby Jackson the ultimate system buster.
Sure.
Like, it was beautiful basketball, beautiful basketball, beautiful basketball. And then this guy who throws up shots at you, like, what are you doing? And then they go in and everyone cheers.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you, like, coach soccer and, you know, there's, you know, rec and then there's competitive, right? And then you get to high school and the mixture of rec to competitive is like very, very strange usually. Usually you have a lot more rec players or some players who've never played. Well, rec parents will cheer really loudly when their kid runs and kicks a ball as far as humanly possible.
Mm-hmm.
Comp parents usually are cringing the whole time. Like, man, you just booted the ball to the other team. We're not playing kickball. We're playing soccer. Mm-hmm. Please just make the 10-yard pass to the kid to your right that has wide open space to run down the sideline. Don't just kick the ball as far as you can, but every time you hear you know the roar of the crowd, it's because some kid kicked the ball as far as he can. It's like, okay, that's not really the sport, but that's where you kind of have to like adjust what you're doing and like sort of like your entire philosophy on how you're working with players. And I think for the Kings to be successful, they have to live in some weird world where DeMar DeRozan does his thing while they do their thing. And I don't know if that's 100% possible all the time, but at the same time, you have to appreciate a guy, again, like a Bobby Jackson, who does things that like realistically like weren't good basketball plays.
Sure.
But it doesn't matter. It goes in. You know, we can talk all of day long. I can sit here and break down the dynamics of point per possession, right?
And it's, please don't.
It's just like, unless you're hitting 60% of your mid-range jumpers, 60%, they're a bad shot compared to a corner three, because a corner three is worth 3 points and a two-point jumper. So the difference.
It's the analytics revolution in the NBA. Three is more than two.
Yeah.
Stunning math.
Well, a 40% three, because that's what the corner three is right around 40%, is worth 1.2 points. A 50% jumper from 18 feet, if you hit 50% of them, that's only worth 1 point. So you're falling behind 0.2 points per possession every single time down the court. After every five possessions, you're down 1 point after, you know, so it slowly incrementally like adds up.
I feel like there's a way where you can kind of pick your, where DeMar can pick his spots. And this is where I think the basketball IQ factor matters a lot.
Yes.
Where they're going to run their offense and he may, maybe his shot volume goes down X amount, whether it's two, three shots a game. I don't know.
Yeah.
But maybe there are points where he's doing a dribble handoff and it's get downhill and kick it out to Trey Lyles or Keegan in the corner. And that's the right play. But you know what? Hey, crunch time. It's down to 90 seconds left. Taking that dribble handoff, you're going to be DeMar DeRozan. You're going to get to your spot and you're going to get a shot up.
Yeah.
Is that like that's where I think it's not necessarily playing, blowing up the system to make sure that DeMar DeRozan is comfortable for 48 minutes of 82 games. It's, hey, all those late leads, not late leads, all those games the Kings lost late last year, that's where I think, man, having DeMar DeRozan, who can just go get you a bucket outside of the scope of the system, who's going, okay, we know De'Aaron can do that, we know Malik can do that, man, can Keegan do that? Can somebody else be the guy, puts the ball in the deck and goes and gets him a bucket? Now they have one.
Oh, yeah.
Where he has played enough games, he's been in the league long enough, where he senses that moment. He knows, hey, this game's getting away. 12-point lead's down to 5. We need to score. I'm just going to go do that.
Well, that, and look around the league at the teams. Okay, so first of all, the two teams in the finals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Dallas Mavericks have two of the best one-on-one players in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's they were highly successful. You go to the same thing with the Boston Celtics. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, these are one-on-one players.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how these systems, that's how they are system breakers. The Boston Celtics shoot a ton of threes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Dallas wants to shoot more threes as well, but you need these types of players. And I think not only do the Kings have one of them, mm-hmm, now, but they also have two because they already had De'Aaron Fox. And on top of that, mm-hmm, they have a third in Malik Monk. So you, mm-hmm, have these three one-on-one guys who can do something different in, mm-hmm, in crunch time.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't want to take away from what DeMar DeRozan does, because for decades, the mid-range game was like, it was spectacular. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a huge part of the game, mm-hmm, and it's gone away from that. And I think having a player that can live in that area, and not only that, get to the free throw line is super
high. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Those are really, really big things to have on your team.
Mm-hmm.
And so hopefully I think the Kings could live in the mid-range a lot more.
Yeah, the mid-range shot is only bad if you're not good at making it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not even the, hey, I can get into a rhythm 16-footer and I'm going to cash this, mm-hmm, at whatever percent. It's the guys who took a step inside the three-point line to shoot a long two. It's like, no, just stay out there beyond the three-point line, step back 8 inches, and get 3 points for your shot instead of two.
Yeah.
Like, that's where I think you're right. I think everybody knows the Kings are they're going to drive and kick and spray threes, and that's what it is, where I think there's going to be a ton of opportunities in the mid-range because teams are built defensively to let teams settle for that.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have a player who teams have to kind of game plan defensively around stopping him in the mid-range, so maybe it opens other stuff up. But somebody said in the chatty house, this is where Mike Brown comes in. That's where having a good coaching staff can kind of help facilitate all this.
Yeah, Mike Brown and Jay Triano. And, you know, again, you have the tie with Triano and DeMar DeRozan.
Mm-hmm.
I think the realistically how this works is that both DeMar DeRozan and the Kings give a little.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to give everything. They don't have to give in to what they're doing and all of a sudden become just a mid-range jump shooting team. But last season, we saw DeMar DeRozan take his career-high 2.8 three-point attempts per game. If he could get to 5,
mm-hmm,
that 1.2 more three-point attempts per, mm-hmm, game, and if instead of shooting 33%, he can shoot 36%,
mm-hmm,
the Kings are going to be deadly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because everything else he brings, but for me, if he wants to score 20 or 24 or 22 a game, in order for him to get there, he has to take that next step as a shooter in this system.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Not for the Bulls. For, mm-hmm, the Bulls, it's like, hey, man, we're down. I need you to go to work, mm-hmm, every single time down. Go to work, go to work, go to, mm-hmm, work. Do whatever you take, whatever you need to do to get a basket.
What he did here in Sacramento against the Kings, that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's not who the Kings are.
No.
And the Kings aren't in that situation very often where you're just like, hey, so one dude has to just like sit there and do his thing the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there are a lot of, just for sake of like pointing it out, De'Aaron Fox averaged over 26 points a game in a King system where everyone gets an opportunity to score. Mm-hmm. DeMar DeRozan can too. I don't know, 26, but yeah, like he can certainly average 21, 22 points per game in this system with, mm-hmm, this group of players, by doing a lot of what they do and then mixing in some of what he does.
Yeah. Like, I can't wait to see how this all shakes out.
Yeah.
It's going to be so interesting to see how it fits. Last thing, I didn't hear Domas say this. I thought I listened to all the audio, but maybe I missed something. He said Kevin Huerter, he's been working out with him. Huerter's in great shape. Shot looks good.
Mm-hmm.
Are we just kind of, I don't want to say we, am I just sleeping on Kevin Huerter as a factor for the Kings? Have I written him off too early? Because to me, I had him gone this offseason. He was going to get traded. And then he didn't. And now when we talk about starting shooting guard, I never really personally include him in that conversation. But is there a chance that Kevin Huerter is just going to shoot 40-plus percent from three again and open things back up for the Kings offense?
Yeah, totally. I mean,
is that just on the table and I'm just being a big dummy for not acknowledging it?
I don't think you're being a big dummy. I mean, I think the way that fandom works, the way that, you know, even media works a lot of the time, is that you're either in or out on players,
mm-hmm.
right? And so you can be all in on a player, and then things go wrong, and all of a sudden everyone shifts to all out. And then it's really difficult for people to climb back into the boat mm-hmm. and say, okay, like, no, we want to see what he has to offer. Like, we got into this discussion on Saturday on the Kings Beat podcast, me and Sean and Brendan, about, like, well, what's next for Kevin Huerter? And the answer is, like, he's got as good a chance, maybe a better chance
mm-hmm.
than anyone to start at the shooting guard position. Or if you want to start DeMar DeRozan at the two and move Kevin Huerter to the three, because one of them 6'6", one of them 6'7", and mm-hmm. maybe one of them could use a little bit more of a, you know, not as quick a guard. Okay. Like, that, to me, if you're going to have DeRozan and you're going to have Sabonis on the floor who aren't natural three-point shooters and the spacing could get bad, then, and you have an elite who has proven to be in the past mm-hmm. an elite three-point shooter who was third in scoring on your team, you know, the season before. If you can put that guy on the court, now I think there's going to be some defensive issues, but I also think that there's going to be like an oh my gosh offense with, you know, three really good three-point shooters and DeMar DeRozan and Domantas Sabonis on the court at the same time.
Yeah.
But, like, we're going to have to wait and see how it all plays out. I'm not convinced that that's how this is going to go, and Mike Brown is going to do what's best for all of the players, not just one.
Yeah, I'm... The more I think about this, and the more I look and we talk about what does this look like with DeRozan, and I might be moving back into the idea of Kevin Huerter starting. Because if that's what it was last year, if it was really, hey, he got knocked off of his off track by all the Chris Duarte stuff in the preseason, and then he started slow and just never gained his confidence back. He got hot there for a second, but it never came together the way we thought it would.
Mm-hmm.
If you know that starting him is going to bring that back and give you that additional element, even if it means sacrificing a little bit on the defensive end, I'm just doing that and figuring out the rotations defensively.
Well, I think that that's part of the discussion, but again, you don't make a like gigantic decision on a rotational piece just because somebody gets their feelings hurt and can't play in a different system. Like because at the end of the day, you need to do what's best for everybody.
But I think that's ultimately what is best for everybody.
Well, no, because what's best for everybody might be that you have an elite defensive player at the shooting guard position who shot 42% from three last year,
mm-hmm.
who doesn't need 12 shots per game to get things going.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Keon Ellis. Mm-hmm. That could be what's best for the team.
Sure.
What could be best for the team is putting Trey Lyles in the starting lineup, moving Keegan Murray to the three, DeMar DeRozan at the two, and then having a bigger lineup. That might be what's best for the team.
Mm.
Like, we don't know until it all plays out, and you got to mix and match. Can Kevin Huerter and Malik Monk be like a super dynamic scoring duo off the bench?
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe they can.
Yeah.
With Trey Lyles. Like, maybe that's your three-man bench, like, yeah. that's going to play a primary minute, is that group. And maybe that's how you get this thing done. I think there are a lot of things that have to be figured out, but that's where good coaching comes in, and that's where, like, preseason and training camp and seeing three-man rotations and four-man rotations and seeing, like, how players play together, how they play off of each other, that's really huge. And until we see it and, you know, like, sort of build up and actually play, we're not going to know.
Yeah. Can't wait to see how all of this shakes out with the Sacramento Kings. I'm done sleeping on Kevin Huerter. I think Kevin Huerter is going to be a factor at some point or in some way.
No, I think
maybe it's as a starter, maybe it's off the bench.
No, I believe Kevin, backing. As of right now, yeah. And it,
he's like, one of their nine best guys, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And not only that, but the Kings, realistically, they need to keep his value up, whether it's for themselves.
That's a great point.
Or whether it's for a trade,
mm-hmm.
but they need to rebuild the value that he had the year before and kind of figure out what they're doing.
The 49ers announced some roster moves officially.
Okay.
No surprises here. Matt Breida and Keyshawn Vaughn, the running backs, officially let go. Punter Presley Harvin III did not make the team over Mitch Wishnowsky. He's gone. Offensive lineman Lewis Kidd also gone. And Jontre Kirkland, his release was reported a little bit earlier today. He is also gone. Nothing unexpected so far. Those final three will hit waivers. So if they clear waivers, the 49ers can bring them back to their practice squad if they like any of those guys in particular. Breida and Vaughn have been in the league long enough that they are released and unrestricted free agents.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts?
I have none
on any of that.
Okay, so I would say this. Breida's a guy that feels like they had him in camp. Number one, because he knows the system. Number two, because Kyle Shanahan always has a veteran that he's brought back that's been on one of his teams before. Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't be shocked if Breida is a guy who is out there and they're telling, hey, man, stay in shape, because there could become a point this season where if we have a couple of injuries, we're going to call.
Yeah, I think he's a candidate to come back on the practice squad for sure.
Yeah.
Just veteran depth in-house. I think Cody Schrader, the undrafted rookie, I think he gets released and they try and get him back to the practice squad if mm-hmm. he clears waivers. But I think you're right. I think having a player that they know, everything hit the fan and they need to bring up a running back to play in 2 days, they know that Breida can just go do what they need him to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I don't think anybody's itching to go sign him either. Yeah, so that's what's happening with the Niners. No Brandon Ayuk stuff yet. No Trent Williams stuff yet. I saw a report today that Trent Williams is willing to hold out week one. I think I saw that from ESPN.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's the whole point of the holdout.
Yeah.
Like continuing to have that leverage.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what. The Brandon Ayuk thing is what it is. No updates. If the 49ers botch this with Trent Williams, where they are starting against a defense that should be one of the five or six best defenses in the league.
Yeah, maybe better than that.
In New York. And you're starting your season with Jalen Moore at left tackle. I got questions for the front office.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're motivated to get Trent Williams back in the building before week one, but if they're sitting there going, yeah, no, it'll be fine.
We have breaking news.
We got breaking news?
CeeDee Lamb has reached an agreement today on a four-year, $136 million deal that now makes him the second highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history. The deal includes $38 million signing bonus, the largest ever given for a wide receiver. This is all per Adam Schefter.
So what were the years? Four and what? How much?
Four, 136.
So 30, quick math. Mm-hmm.
No.
4 and 136? Yeah, 38? No. 36? I don't know.
Yeah.
However much it is.
Yeah, yeah.
I was hoping you'd have the math on that one.
Oh, yeah, it's 34. My bad. Yeah, I got you.
Okay.
34. Yeah, I can do the quick math for you.
Thank you.
Let me just set this up in my mind.
Okay, maybe that sparks a Brandon Ayuk deal. Maybe that's what he was waiting on. The Cowboys blinked with CeeDee Lamb, and maybe Brandon Ayuk now has the numbers with the 49ers. Although apparently they have numbers down and they're waiting to clear one last hurdle. I don't know. I have no idea.
It's got to be the biggest hurdle of all time.
You know what I can tell you? No update.
No update.
I'm going to make a pick in my fantasy draft coming up next. We'll also dive in. Is there another team jumping into the Brandon Ayuk sweepstakes? We'll talk about that as well. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Hour number two coming up on The Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube here on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Center.
Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number two, I'm Kyle Madsen, that's James Hamm. We're hanging out with you until noon, then we'll hand it off to D'Lo and KC, and they'll take you up to 4 o'clock right here on ESPN 1320 and Sacramento Sports Leader. Big salute to Jiffy Lube. They sponsor the program. We love Jiffy Lube very much. I have a fantasy draft happening right now,
mm-hmm.
and I think I've decided on a pick.
Oh?
But before we get to it, why don't you tell the people what we're giving away on the internet?
All right, right now, if you go online to ESPN1320.com, we're giving away Six Flags Discovery Kingdom tickets. So ESPN has your chance to score tickets to Six Flags Discovery Kingdom.
You're damn right we do.
Just fill out the entry form and submit at ESPN1320.com for your chance to visit the thrill capital of Northern California.
Thrill cap, baby.
The prize, if you are the winner, is a four-pack of Six Flags admission tickets courtesy of Six Flags Discovery Kingdom. Amen. Let's do this.
I'm glad you didn't read the parenthetical.
No.
I thought you were just rolling and you were going to Ron Burgundy into the parenthetical.
No, I don't need a teleprompter.
Yeah. Very good. I want to remind you also, Thursday, Sac State football begins right here on ESPN 1320, 4 o'clock, Sac State at San Jose State. Looking for the upset of the FBS program. Mm-hmm. All right.
We got all kinds of stuff.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
The pick is in, everybody.
The pick is in? What?
With the number 7 overall pick in the Dynasty Football League, Fantasy Football League, Team Kyle, because I haven't chosen a fun team name yet this season, selects Xavier Worthy, wide receiver, Kansas City Chiefs. I want a piece of the Chiefs offense.
That's right.
I just in case, maybe he stinks, but just in case he's the next Tyreek Hill, I want to make sure that he's on my team and part of my program. Deep at wide receiver right now, but there's nobody that I loved at running back to take at number 7 overall. So I went with the upside. Ladd McConkey was another player that I was considering at that spot, just to be totally transparent with everybody.
Yeah.
I think that there's going to be volume for him. I think that a Greg Roman passing game is going to feature a lot of Ladd McConkey.
Yep.
And I think he's going to be good in that system with Justin Herbert, who is an ascending quarterback in the NFL. But I went with the upside with Xavier Worthy and the Kansas City Chiefs.
That's exactly what I would have done. I got to be honest. They have a lot of issues on their receiving core, whether it's the Rashee Rice situation. Mm-hmm. He hasn't been suspended by the league yet. He may not get suspended by the league. There were some suspensions this week, but he's probably there's potential for like a 3-4 game suspension for.
That they went and signed Juju Smith-Schuster makes me think that they got wind of something.
Yeah, so...
But I still don't think, even with Juju in the mix, even if Rashee Rice is there, Hollywood Brown's already hurt.
Hollywood Brown's always hurt.
Even if Juju Smith-Schuster is in the building, I don't think that that affects Xavier Worthy's snaps or his overall workload. Or
well,
his
that
volume.
And when you get... if Hollywood Brown is healthy, he's just going to be another deep threat, which is fine. Like, I just think that Worthy is a better deep threat. And they had him run of the ball a little bit. I like it.
Yeah.
Like a little Debo stuff.
Yeah, man. Andy Reid's going to figure out the best way to use his speed. And, Xavier Worthy, now a member of the Kyle Madsen Dynasty Fantasy Football team that I don't have a name for yet. Somebody said I should have taken Jaden Daniels. Yeah, fair enough.
Fair enough.
I have so I took over this team from somebody else. I have 4 quarterbacks on my roster in a 1 quarterback league.
Mm.
But here's my issue. None of them are awesome.
No.
They all fall in the bucket of guy that you draft in the 12th round of your redraft league. And this is Dynasty, so you only pick rookies. And then you drop as many players as you draft.
Oh, so who are you dropping to pick up Worthy?
I got options.
Oh, yeah.
I got options. Let's see. Amir Abdullah. Again, because in leagues this deep, I have 32 guys here on my roster. Is that right? 32?
Oh, man.
So in leagues this deep, you just, anytime you think a player might do something, you just try and scoop them.
Mm-hmm.
So I have like Amir Abdullah's on my team. Patrick Taylor, formerly of the Packers, now of the 49ers, probably going to get cut today or tomorrow. He's on my team.
All right.
Russell Gage, Bucks wide receiver. Deron Bland.
How many
IDP,
how many team is
out
it?
Out for a while.
How many teams are in the league?
12.
Okay, so the Serpentine, you're not going to get a lot of options when it comes back to you.
It is a normal draft.
Oh.
Order set by standings last year.
Okay.
But then it's 1 through 12 and then 1 through 12 again.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So no Serpentine. That's interesting.
It's like a real, it's great. I have so much fun with this. The team building aspect is my favorite part. But I have four quarterbacks who all, like I said, all fall into that, like, meh, fine. Jared Goff, Geno Smith, Baker Mayfield, and Matthew Stafford. All in the like, sure. Too probably valuable just to outright drop, but not quite good enough to fetch anything substantial in any kind of trade.
Yeah.
So I just mix and match depending on matchups.
Okay.
And I don't, honestly, I'm not the biggest Jaden Daniels guy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's where I landed.
Okay.
I feel good about the Xavier Worthy pick. I should probably send it in our group chat, but Luke can do that.
You might be able to just sit, and when it comes back around, there might be another opportunity there for you to draft a quarterback.
Yeah, we'll see how things shake out.
Yeah.
In my opinion, the best way to do fantasy is in this dynasty route.
Mm. Okay,
where I have Brandon Ayuk, for example. I just have Brandon Ayuk for as long as he plays football.
Unless you trade him or waive him.
Unless I trade him or drop him. It's fun.
All right.
Yeah. So that's what's happening. Xavier Worthy, now a member of my program. Speaking of Brandon Ayuk, Peter Schrager tweeted something last night. Peter Schrager from NFL Media.
Mm-hmm.
I think Peter Schrager wants to be a GM, and he's very plugged in around the league because I think he's trying to be in league circles. Mm-hmm. And I think for the most part, is really well plugged in. Like when he does a mock draft, he does one mock draft every year, and there's always a couple of really interesting nuggets in there that show just kind of how well connected he is. He tweeted last night something about Brandon Ayuk and the Commanders. Let me grab the exact tweet. Washington GM Adam Peters just spent 7 years in San Francisco with John Lynch and was integral in San Francisco's 2020 draft. That was the draft they took Brandon Ayuk. Jaden Daniels' go-to guy at ASU in 2019, Brandon Ayuk, had 1,192 yards. Washington also now has a new third-round pick that they acquired in the Jahan Dotson trade. As much as Pittsburgh has gotten all the buzz, shouldn't Washington and San Francisco be talking? The reason this is noteworthy is because, and Schrager said to Richard Sherman when Sherman replied to the tweet, he basically said, I'm throwing stuff at the wall here. Like, I don't know anything. I'm just throwing stuff out there.
Mm-hmm.
But Mike Silver also, in a hit on a radio station in the Bay Area, also said he's not ruling out Washington. Which leads me to believe there's something brewing in Washington where people can't report it. But they're just going, hey, don't sleep on the Commanders, by the way. And, oh, hey, shouldn't the 49ers and Commanders be talking? Like, because they don't have it, like, firm enough to report 49ers in Washington in talks.
Mm-hmm.
But they know that something's going on. That's what I can't shake. Like, why are the Commanders coming up from two separate places now? And maybe it's just random. Maybe it's because the Brandon Ayuk thing is now gone all the way through the preseason and people need something new to talk about.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think anytime you see a team go out and get assets, that kind of like pops up in your head, like, okay, wait a sec, why are they going out there and accumulating assets right before the start of the season? Why are they trading away a wide receiver for a third round pick? Why are they like Dotson's a good player. I don't
doing
know
the
he's,
Brian, doing the Brian Windhorst finger.
Yeah, the Brian Windhorst. Why are they doing this? That's so, I mean, I get it. I get why someone might be like jumping to conclusions here, but at the same time, I want to see what is exactly the Niners, like, how mm-hmm. they play this out.
Yeah.
I think the CeeDee Lamb situation hurts them.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
I would assume so anyway.
Even still, we keep talking about they just kept waiting and like, and seeing all these other teams go and get these deals done. Okay, they just waited again. I don't know.
So, look, Brandon Ayuk was given permission to talk to Washington. And somebody in the chat, Guarov in the chat, says, Jaden and Brandon Ayuk are really close friends as well. Right, there was all the stuff on social media with him FaceTiming with Jaden Daniels and saying, they don't want me and all that stuff. But Washington was one of the four teams that Ayuk got permission to talk to, according to Matt Maiocco from NBC Sports.
Mm-hmm.
It was Pittsburgh, New England, Cleveland, and Washington. He wanted to play for either Pittsburgh or Washington. He said so in the Pivot interview with Ryan Clark. I feel like I need red string to connect all these dots.
Yeah, we need to do like a murder board.
Full blown.
Yeah.
But follow me. So he wanted to play for Pittsburgh or Washington. Niners worked out a deal with Pittsburgh, who apparently has a contract that Ayuk is happy with.
Mm-hmm.
They worked out a deal with Cleveland, but Ayuk didn't want to go there. And they worked out a deal with New England, who was ready to offer him a bajillion dollars, and he didn't want to go there. Washington has been noticeably absent from all this, and apparently has not engaged in trade talks at all, which leads me to believe they don't want to go there with the contract. I don't think that so unless there was some change of heart in their building where they went, oh, hey, this is real now,
mm-hmm.
we want to get involved, I feel like if they were going to get involved, they would have gotten involved a while ago, and we would have heard about it. But the fact that Washington has just been nowhere to be found this entire process, when the entire time they could have been talking contract with Ayuk, I think there's a contractual issue where they see Ayuk's value in similar terms that the 49ers do. And Washington's going, well, we're not going to get him. If the Niners can't get him for this contract, whatever it is, then we certainly aren't. So we're not even going to bother.
Yeah, it's tough, man.
That's what I think happened. So I don't think, again, unless Washington had some crazy change of heart after the preseason, I don't think they're going to come swooping in last minute and go, hey, by the way, hey, here's $35 million a year and $75 million guaranteed. I don't think it's happening.
Well, that, and I think the only way that the Niners make a trade with them, you would want Terry McLaurin back. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that, first of all, I think he'd fit really well. Like, very similar style of receiver to Ayuk.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't know that you're getting better and you'd want picks. I don't know. Why would both of these teams, like, this late in the game change?
Mm-hmm.
But maybe they do. I don't know. I like that we keep doing non-Brandon Ayuk updates.
The non-update update?
Yeah.
Hey, the latest on Brandon Ayuk, it's the same thing that everyone else has said. Thanks, guys. No guaranteed number for CD yet?
No, not that I've seen. Not that I've seen.
Interesting.
Yeah, okay. But there's usually, I don't know who the guy is that usually breaks that number.
It's
100 million guaranteed.
Fully guaranteed?
That is what the NFL website just tweeted out, NFL on Twitter. Breaking.
I am skeptical.
Yeah.
I think that's probably going to be the guaranteed for injury.
Okay.
Because 100 million, does it say fully guaranteed? Is that the wording?
No. Well, let's see. It says with $100 million guaranteed.
Yeah, I need to see the full guarantee. I got to see the structure. That's a smart guy thing to say in this scenario. James and I are waiting on the structure before
we
fully discuss the CD Lamb contract.
Whether this is a good deal for the Dallas Cowboys or not.
But yeah, no, it doesn't help the 49ers for sure. Whatever number that comes in at.
Yeah.
Whatever structure that is, that I don't think it helps San Francisco.
It does help James's fantasy football team.
Yeah, that's big time for you.
We will now keep CD Lamb without any question. I mean, we were going to anyways.
And that's I don't want to talk about your fantasy team as we've talked about my fantasy team all day. No. But putting aside the fantasy aspect of it for a minute, you brought something up. I think it was over the break, how your concern was less like CD not playing or going elsewhere. Your bigger concern was, hey, the longer he holds out, the slower the start is going to be.
Yeah, if he's bad for the first 3 or 4 weeks of the year and then gets hurt, which happens quite often with these situations, mm-hmm. then, and I've got Puka Nacua, so I'm sure. Like, okay, should I just keep Puka?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're both young.
Yeah.
But you're like, you're really torn.
That's where, and that's, so that whole aspect of it is where I think that aspect of the Ayuk discussion has kind of gotten not swept under the rug, but kind of pushed to the back burner because there's just so much question about whether he's actually going to play and whether he's going to sign or whether he's going to get traded. There's 1,000 moving parts.
Yeah.
And okay. So let's say he signs today. He gets a deal done today. That means he has a couple of practices this week and then three practices next week. And then he has to go play in an NFL game against a good defense.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw it last year with Nick Bosa. I did the math because somebody said something on NFL Network that didn't sound right to me. So I went and looked. That's why this info's in my head. He didn't have a sack until week three last year.
Yep.
And he didn't get to three sacks until week eight. Like the pressure numbers were okay, but watch Nick Bosa for the first half of last year, and it's just not, it is not a defensive player of the year caliber player.
We were roasting him every single week.
Good player, but not the elite, highest paid non-quarterback in the league player that the 49ers paid. So I think that becomes, it's been a worry, certainly, but I think that becomes even more of a worry, less so with Trent Williams, I think, because A, he's played for so long, and B, he's so dominant at his position that I think as an offensive lineman, you can pretty much step in and get a few practices under your belt and be good to go. With Ayuk, I'm less certain. And I definitely think that could be a concern for him and for the 49ers going into the year where, okay, great, Brandon Ayuk's back, but at what percentage?
Yeah. So Ayuk, the one distinction I'd make is that Ayuk has been there and he's not working out. I mean, he's working out, but he's not doing on-field workouts, right? But what Ayuk is doing, I believe, is he's in the wide receiver room. Like, he knows the playbook. He knows what's happening. Unless he's just, like, chilling, you know, like, hanging out in the cafeteria. Like, everyone leaves, and he's still sitting there by himself, like, eating Cheetos. And then and then everyone comes back. It's like, hey, what's up, man? How was the workout? You know, that's always possible. That's what he's doing. But
do you make anything of him going to Vegas with the team?
Yeah, he's saying, I want to be here. He's saying, I want to be here. Just figure it out. Just pay.
That was very significant to me.
Yeah.
That he went. And again, not that that's, hey, it's signed, sealed, delivered, everything's done. But I think the optics of him traveling with the team, walking in with the team, being on the sideline during the game, not just up in the booth. And also, the optics of that versus if he hadn't traveled with the team, it's like, nah, I'm staying home. That I think it's pretty significant to me and a pretty significant sign of amicability between him and the 49ers, where I do think that all the reporting has been, hey, they're really close. There's some hurdle to clear with guaranteed money in the final year of the deal. And that's kind of what it's going to be. So I took that as a good sign.
Yeah, I think it was, and I think he just keeps looking at them and saying, like, look, I'm your best option, and I think they know he's their best option.
Right, that's what's so frustrating about this. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. No, but I mean, that's at the end of the day, you want to be the best option for somebody, and I get it, you know, like, the 49ers have to do what's best for them long-term.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is always going to be a negotiation. That's where I think the NFL and the NBA are different, where it's like, man, go get your money. Mm-hmm. It feels like the NFL is a little different that way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, guys, like, maybe they say, yeah, you know, go ahead and get your money. But then you start having the pressure, like, hey, man, it's time to get in here. Mm-hmm. There aren't holdouts in the NBA, at least not anymore. There used to be years ago. But when they put in the rookie salary scale, it eliminated the holdout, basically.
Well, with non-guaranteed money in the NFL... Like, that's, and with how dangerous the sport is from a health perspective,
you
have to. I don't blame Brandon Ayuk in this
at all,
or any player. Trent Williams, same thing. He's 36. He has no guaranteed money left. If he steps on the field today and gets hurt in a significant way, that it's ostensibly the end of his career. It's the end of his earning potential.
Yeah.
So, hey, he's got one more bite at the apple. He's going to try and take it. Brandon Ayuk, this is his first bite at the apple after his rookie contract. He's trying to make the most of it. That's awesome. But that's where, okay, maybe he's being a little bit of a pain in the ass. But if you're the Niners, just figure this out, dudes. Everybody knows. That's what's so frustrating about this. Everybody knows where this is headed. Just get it there. Whatever you got to do to get it over to the finish line, and then deal with, there's just no way that the damage that's being done now, the potential short-term damage of Ayuk being not as good out the gate, the pall that this has cast over the 49ers entire preseason, the injury potential of a player who didn't get a full offseason to work out and ramp up, all of those risks, there's no way that whatever couple of million dollars or few million dollars you're trying to save in 2028 is going to be worth it.
I agree. There's just the number
of ways that this could go wrong for the 49ers is building by the day. And certainly if they wind up getting rid of Ayuk, then nobody's going to, in 2028, nobody's going to go, man, wish they hadn't guaranteed Ayuk that much money. That's not going to happen. No one's ever going to get mad because you paid a good player.
Yeah.
Ever. No, if they re-signed Elijah Mitchell to $25 million a year, then yeah, it's like, whoa, what is that? But there are so few downsides to giving Ayuk his money in whatever number of years he wants it. Especially when you own the, everybody knows where he's headed. He wants to be here. They want him here.
I think the other interesting thing is that every single wide receiver was eligible to get paid this summer.
Yeah.
So that's the problem. Mm-hmm. Like, you want to look at the top 10 receivers. They all got paid. Mm-hmm. I mean, Justin Jefferson, Tyreek Hill, CeeDee Lamb.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep going. Mike Evans didn't get paid, I don't think. But he's also, you know, aging.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but for the most part, like Amon Ross St. Brown, like they all got paid.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you doing? Because there's like literally there's a going rate. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, Luke, who's now just hanging out in the Jetty House, shout out to Luke.
He's now part of the family. Now, hi, Luke.
Welcome, bro. He said that he's worried that Shanahan might be one of those guys. Luke's a Bucks guy, by the way. But he said he's worried Shanahan might be one of those guys who thinks it's his system and he can just plug Pearsall in and get a close enough facsimile to Ayuk. That's a small concern for me. But if that was the case, I think they would have traded Ayuk before the draft or during the draft. I think they could have gotten a mid to late first rounder for him this year.
Mm.
But the only way, from what I understand in talking to people, from what I understand, they weren't going to make a move up. In fact, this has been reported. The only way they were going to move up is if they could get one of the top three, Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, or Roma Dunze. So if they weren't going to get into the top seven or eight or however quickly those guys went, then they weren't going to move on. So I don't know, man. It's gross.
Yeah.
I'm over it.
Yeah.
I'm over it. Just get it done. Whatever you got to do.
One way or another, just make it end.
Hopefully the CeeDee Lamb thing isn't a new wrench in the negotiations. So, all right. I have a quirky baseball thing I want to talk about.
Oh.
Because a thing is happening in baseball today that can only, I feel like, happen in baseball.
Yep.
We'll talk about that. We'll have some more 49ers. We'll get some more Kings in here for you as well. The handoff coming up in the next 15 minutes with one of D'Lo or Casey. I don't know whose day it is. I don't know. One of them would be in here.
I should probably light up the computer over there.
Yeah, it'll be fine. You can do that at the break, which is what we're hitting now on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Center.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Bring a Bucks fan into the chatty house, we start talking about Mike Evans.
That's right.
We're trying to come up with the NFL comp for Mike Evans, or NBA comp for Mike Evans. DeMar DeRozan and Paul George are the two names that came up that intrigued me the most.
Mm.
Like, Paul George just kind of feels right.
Okay.
Because I just very recently, in fact, it was on the rundown all last week and I never got to it. I just recently am just like, I'm just a Paul George guy, I've decided.
Okay. He's won you over with his,
his self-awareness.
Yeah, his podcasting and everything
else.
Yeah,
he a couple years ago said, I've realized I'm not a one on a title team anymore. I'm still good. I've still got a bag. But if a team is going to win a championship, I can't be the best guy on it. Wow. A Hall of Famer just openly saying that is really cool. And then he got asked by Chet Holmgren, I think on Chet's, Chet was either on his podcast or vice versa. He said, all right, final seconds, tie game. Who's getting the last shot? You or Joel Embiid? Paul George is like, that's a Nick Nurse question. Like, great. Oh. Yeah, ask the coach.
Yeah.
Great. Perfect. Whatever the coach draws up, that's what I'm here to do. Shout out to Paul George.
That's a good coach right there, too.
And he's just been really good for the better part of the last decade. He's consistently one of the best guys in the league. One of the, 15 to 20 best guys in the league?
Something like that. Luke's calling you out here if you want to make the pick.
Oh, wait, I can recant the pick and get cold feet, buyer's remorse. yeah, no, I'm sorry, Luke. I've been meaning to do that at breaks, but it's just me and James. So we have a million things going on, and I've forgotten to do that. If you could, in fact, you know what? I'll do it right now.
Oh, there it is. He's going to make the pick.
I'm making this official.
Well, that while he's making the pick, we can tee up. Me and Kyle got in a weird discussion today, and the discussion as we were building up to the show was about Joel Youngblood.
Yes, I am a big baseball guy, yep. And I had never heard of this until today.
Okay, yeah, so Joel Youngblood in 1982, he played for the Mets in a game against the Cubs and then was traded and was able to make it to, was it Philly? He was able to make it to Philly and played for two different teams in one day. Now, the A's had a situation where they traded for a reliever mid-game against a team they were playing against, or they traded a reliever to that team, and the reliever literally walked over and switched sides, I believe. Was it?
I do not remember.
I think it's Rincon.
Ricardo Rincon, that sounds right.
Yeah.
That was the name when you first said this that popped into my head.
Yeah, were they playing Cleveland? And
that sounds right.
And then he... like strolled over, like he got traded
in Moneyball. In Moneyball, that's who Billy Bean / Brad Pitt flies out to talk to when he first talks to Jonah Hill's character. It's about Ricardo Rincon.
Really?
I believe. Okay. I believe that's why he was in Cleveland. I've only seen the movie once.
Yeah. It's very interesting. Yeah, it was 2002 he was traded. Yeah. But Joel Youngblood actually ended up playing for both. And then they made an 83 Fleer card with both his picture and both uniforms on the same day.
Incredible.
Yeah.
So the reason this came up this morning is because if you've not heard about Danny Jansen, this is a super fun thing. So Danny Jansen was playing for the Blue Jays when the Blue Jays played the Red Sox earlier this year. And he was batting when their game against the Red Sox got postponed due to rain. They're picking up that postponement today.
Mm-hmm.
Danny Jansen, in the meantime, was traded to the Red Sox since that game happened. And he will be catching for the Red Sox against the Blue Jays in a game that was suspended while he was batting for the Blue Jays.
Mm.
So when that game resumes, he will be behind the plate and the guy batting will be the guy who replaced Jansen
pinch hitting
for the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Yes.
Someone will pinch hit for him.
Because he's catching for the other team now.
That's wild.
Incredible. Baseball is the only thing where weird stuff like that can happen.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, you'll get the quirky one. Was it Buddy Hield played 78 games last year?
79. Oh, no. How many games did he play?
He played 84 games last year.
I think it was Mikal Bridges played 83 games when he got traded.
Mm-hmm. I think Buddy did too last year.
Did Buddy? Well, so Buddy but never misses
get,
games.
But then you also get Emmanuel Sanders when he got traded to the Niners. The Broncos hadn't had their bye yet and the 49ers had, so he wound up playing 17 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
He played every game that year, or 16, I guess. No, well, 17. He played 17 games that year.
Yeah, Buddy Hield did play 84 games last year.
Yeah. So sometimes quirky stuff, but playing for the same team in the same game, that's only baseball.
Yes.
Only baseball can deal with that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, even in the NBA, a player has, I think it's 48 hours to report.
Mm-hmm.
So once a trade happens, but even once they report, they still have to clear medicals.
Mm-hmm.
All players have to clear medicals for both teams, mm-hmm. and then away they go.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is different. You know, I would say too, I spent yesterday, it was me and the wife, we went out and grabbed pizza at the spot and we were sitting at the bar having a beverage and, you know, a Caprese salad waiting for.
Of course.
We spent almost 16 minutes watching every stolen base and every home run from Shohei this season.
Hell yeah.
Major League Baseball has put out a video.
Hell yeah.
In order of every home run and every stolen base. That dude, okay, so first of all, he hit 40-40 this weekend. He's at 41-40, right?
His 40th home run to get to 40-40 was a walk-off grand slam.
Walk-off grand slam. It's wild. So, but we were watching, and you know how many times he stole a base where it was not even close?
Yeah, dude.
And he's a gigantic man. How do you not see him getting like leaning off first base at all? I don't understand how he steals.
He's an awesome base stealer.
But that's exactly what Jose Canseco was. Like, Canseco wasn't a great base stealer. And then he's like, oh, I'm going to go be a base stealer because I want to go get that mark.
Yeah. He was the first 40-40 guy, right?
Yeah, first 40-40. And I kind of feel like Shohei is just bored and is like, man, batting leadoff. If you're going to walk me, you know what? I'm going to make you pay.
Yeah.
I'm going to steal second. And then sometimes I'll steal third.
Yeah.
And then he does a quick pop-up slide, and he is like so many times, he's already on second base by the time the catcher's releasing them. You're like, bro, how did he get there
so fast?
Ridiculous,
dude. He's amazing.
And he's 6'4". He's like a gigantic human.
I think the fact that we're existing in the same season, like what's happening right now is an iconic Major League Baseball season.
Yes.
You're getting Shohei, who's the fastest player ever to 40-40, who's going to be an MVP in both leagues in back-to-back years, and in one of those seasons, he couldn't even pitch and was going to be the first full-time DH to win the MVP award.
Yeah.
While becoming the seventh member of the 40-40 club and probably the first member of the 45-45 club and potentially a 50-50 club inaugural member.
Yes. I think he's a sixth member of the... Yeah, so it's Soriano, A-Rod, Canseco, Bonds, Acuna. So he's sixth.
Okay, he's the sixth member of the 40-40 club. So this is all happening. Meanwhile, in the other league, you've got Aaron Judge, two more home runs yesterday. He's up to 51.
51, just mashing.
Up to 51 with like 30 games left?
25, I think I did the math yesterday, 25 games left.
He's going to get to 60 again, comfortably.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, I think because he already got to 60 and he went through the trials and tribulations of getting to 60 and the struggle that is getting to 60, I think he's going to just go right past. Like, you're going to be like, holy smokes.
He's just going to blow through it.
Yeah.
Unless teams stop pitching to him, but you have to pitch to him because their lineup's nuts.
Because the dude behind him would have been an MVP candidate if he played for any other era.
It's ridiculous, man.
It is.
It's a historic baseball season happening right now.
Yeah, it kind of feels like, the 98 season where McGuire and Sosa.
Yeah, both just chasing 60.
Yeah, they're both chasing 60 and it's just like taking the league by storm.
Mm-hmm.
This is fun. It is fun. I mean, if you don't like Judge, like if you don't like the Yankees, that's fine. You can still respect what he's doing.
Yeah, Northern California guy.
Yeah, the same with Shohei. Like you don't have to love the Dodgers, but my goodness, man! And someone in the chat puts out the home runs that Judge hits are unreal. Watch Shohei.
Mm-hmm.
He hits line drives that are out of the park so fast that you're like, oh, that's gone.
Yeah,
off the bat, like gone. Oh, that's gone.
And he has hit a couple of absolute nukes this year. Like he is.
Yeah.
I have so much fun. They are both stop what you're doing to watch them hit players.
Oh, totally. The one he hit in against the Astros at Minute Maid,
mm-hmm.
where like there's a first deck, there's a second deck, and then there's like this walkway up above.
Yeah.
He hits it into the walkway. Yeah. You're like, how in the world is that possible?
He almost put it out of Dodger Stadium.
Yes.
To right center.
And then Colorado that has the pine trees in center field?
Yeah.
He puts it like 8 pine trees deep.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, you're just,
It was the longest home run of the year, and then Soler hit one for the Giants a couple feet further.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. What a time. What a time to be a baseball fan.
Yeah, I feel bad that, like, baseball, like, we're in an era where baseball is just, like, it's not nearly as valuable as it was before.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the fact that we're spending some time on it is not for ratings at all. It's just because it's an amazing thing that we're watching and we're sports fans.
Well, it's not a couple of dudes hit their 30th home runs this weekend.
No.
it's just stuff that we've never, ever seen before. In an era where all we do is bitch about how nobody can hit.
Oh, yeah.
And you have these two guys who are putting together historic offensive seasons.
Totally. Totally. Yeah,
having a blast.
I would say the Oakland A's, they're up to 56 wins. I think their preseason pick was 57.
56 and a half? 57 and a half?
So they need one more in the final. What do they get? They have, I think, 21 games left.
Yeah.
21 games left. Brent Rooker did get his 30th. That
good
took
for him.
Forever.
It took There was a minute there where the A's had gone like a week and a half with only J.J. Bleda hitting home runs.
Yeah.
It's really frustrating. Really, really annoying. They got a win against the Brewers. They avoided a sweep there last night. Like you said, a couple of wins away from surpassing their preseason win total. Shout out to the Oakland Athletics.
Who are not last place in the West.
Oh, they're back up to fourth?
The Angels are in last place, and they're actually, the A's are trying to track down the
Rangers.
The Rangers.
Wow, this is big time.
Yeah, they're only four games behind the Rangers in the standings. They're two. They're two
they got
up.
Six games left against Texas, too.
Oh, they're two up on the Angels.
They're and two they games up on the Angels?
And they don't play the Angels again.
Oh, man. Yeah. They could track down the Rangers. That'd be that would be incredible. If the A's finish third in the AL West this year,
that'd be amazing.
It would be just totally ridiculous, especially since their preseason win total was like the lowest in it wasn't history, but it was the lowest in a long time. This is like the 80s, 40 plus years, something like that.
They're picked to lose 105 games.
Yeah, it's crazy. Wild. Kenny Caraway in here. Time for the handoff. What's up, Kenny?
What's going on, guys? Can I ask you guys a question? I brought this up a long time ago, and our guy, Matt George, he got upset with me. Others got upset with me. But I just want to know if you guys understand the premise of what I'm saying. It goes into you guys talking about the A's and, you know, they're potentially, you know, crazy scenario. Probably going to be fourth, maybe even fifth, but, you know, third in the AL West. I watched the A's. I think they got some solid young players. They got some good ball players. Butler, that's my guy. That's one of my favorite players to watch. I said when it was official they were coming to Sacramento, I said it's not inconceivable. Everybody agrees that Fisher is a con artist and a con man, and he's just a bad dude, right? But I said if he really is a con artist, the A's probably will get good at the latter stages of them being in Sacramento, because what a con man does is, his con is Vegas. Like, he's trying to sucker in Las Vegas to pay money, to do whatever the case may be. And to do that, you have to give them something to con them out of their money, right? So I said, I could see the last year or two in Sacramento, if they're really leaving, him keeping the good young players, spending a little money. And the premise of that is, look, Vegas, look what I'm doing. I'm a changed man. Give me your money, all you residents of Las Vegas. So, give me your, the PSLs and all this other stuff. Because look, I'm a changed man. Look at this team I've got coming to Las Vegas.
So I have two things with this. One, John Fisher is not that calculated. He's just not.
Okay.
Secondly, if he was going to do that, he should have been doing it now. Because he still has not secured the funding to begin building that stadium.
Still.
So if that was the goal, if he was trying to sucker people out of money, he should have been investing in the team many moons ago. I don't think that once they secure the funding, I think they're going to be fine getting people to buy tickets initially and all that jazz.
I don't think
they got it. The thing is if that was the calculation, if his big long con was, I'm going to pretend to invest in the team, but then he should have been doing it now, because he's having trouble getting the money that he needs just to get a freaking stadium, much less get butts in the seats.
I understand that. I think I get what you're saying. I think it's a little early to start the con. I think because you still got, like, you're going to have to.
You got to do, because you don't have a stadium.
I understand, but you're going to, and he's cheap. He's a tightwad. He's going to, if that's the case, he's going to have to pay for 4 or 5 years. He don't want to do that. And maybe that's where you talk about, like, he's not that calculated. Like, the long term, you're probably right, but he don't want to pay for 4 or 5 years. He want to pay for, like, 2 years.
Yeah.
And then like, have that. Look what I did the last 2 years. Get people to buy the season tickets in Vegas. And then when he gets to Vegas and he's got the money, then it goes back to how things were.
I think he's already in a situation where the natural progression of a team is pretty solid for him, right? He's got a bunch of young hitters that are coming up. He's got players at almost every position, like, that are solidified, that are young, that are, you're not going to pay very much the next couple of years in Oakland, in Sacramento. And I know there's some rumors coming out about, like, these exorbitant prices for A's tickets in Sacramento. I mean, first of all, it's a 14,000 seat building, mm-hmm. and you're talking about Major League Baseball. So if you're gonna you're gonna have to actually jack the prices up, because it is going to be supply and demand. I don't agree with it, but it's supply and demand. I mean, there's only going to be so many seats that are available for a game. But also, I think just like he can stumble into a really good team just by letting this thing progress as it is. You know, again, they've got young players that people like Lawrence Butler, Zach Geloff, they've got, you know, Jack Wilson's son coming up mm-hmm. at third base. Jacob Wilson. They've got Soderstrom, who might develop. They've got the kid they just drafted that is just flying through the minor leagues.
Kurtz.
Kurtz is already in Double A, and I mean, he had a 1500 OPS in Single A, like coming out of college. Mm. They're like, what in the world is happening here? Like, they had to move him up so fast. So, like, it looks like they actually have something. They're going to have to pay for pitching, right? But overall, I think we might get to see good baseball in Sacramento.
This is where I agree with you. I don't think John Fisher maneuvered the board to make it this way. I think this is just the natural progression of the A's, mm-hmm. where they're good for a couple years. They're good for that. This year reminds me of the 2017 year. Mm-hmm. I've said it on the Green and Gold pregame show, where you saw Matt Chapman, you saw a little bit of Matt Olson, where you start to see the vision of what this team could be. And then they let those young players go out there and compete and be really good. And then when they get too expensive, they ship them out and they begin the cycle again. I think Sacramento could be catching that upswing,
mm-hmm.
where you are catching this group of young players, all the guys James just named, you're catching those guys being the ones that get the A's back to winning next year. Maybe it's 80 games. Mm-hmm. But then the next year, hey, look at that. They're in the wild card hunt. And then they're in the wild card hunt and playing for the division in the last couple of years they're here in Sacramento, just by the natural progression of how the A's team built.
Yeah. And mind you, I don't know if that's what he would do at all. I'm just saying, sure. Like, people call him a con man. That's the move of a con man, right? Like, oh, look, I've changed, sucker you into something, and then sell you on a hope and a dream.
Mm-hmm.
And that, when you get to Vegas,
I could see Sacramento being the one who's getting conned here for sure, because I think that that's where, like, even if the deal falls through in Vegas, yeah, they're going to be here. Like, there's a lot of people here in Sacramento who believe that. And I know, like, there's also like the buzz from the Bay Area, oh, it'll go up for grabs and all this stuff. It's like, come on now. I mean, this thing is going one way at this point. It's either Vegas or Sacramento, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I don't know. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I've always thought that if I was John Fisher and I was a jerk and pretty spiteful,
I'd say
it would happen this way. There's no way I would sell to anybody in the Bay Area. There's no way.
He's selling to whoever's giving him the most money.
I could find a lot of money elsewhere. Like, that's just like mm-hmm. my thinking. Like, as contentious as this has been, and mm-hmm. everybody saying everything they've said, there's no way I'd sell to anybody in the Bay Area. No way.
Well, that's where having a good commissioner. Yeah.
Oh, that's the other thing. A leader of the sport.
Bless you.
Would say, like a Adam Silver in the Clippers situation. Like, no.
David Stern. Yeah.
David Stern. Like, no, this is what you're going to do. What's the Clippers guy? I'm drawing
Steve Ballmer.
No, oh, yeah. the
Donald Sterling.
Donald Sterling.
Oh, yeah.
This
yeah.
is what you're going to do, Donald Sterling. I don't care mm-hmm. what you think you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's happening.
Well, he did the same with the Maloofs. He did the same exact thing. I mean, even like Chris Hansen tried to jack up the rate right at the last second to mm-hmm. mess with Sacramento, and he said no. Like, the bidding's over, and you lost. Go.
And that's where Major League Baseball is. Has dropped the ball in such a major way in this particular situation is the lack mm-hmm. of leadership. And in a lot of cases, Manfred being in cahoots with a guy like John Fisher.
It's kind of wild.
Fisher can't execute what he's been able to execute without the quote-unquote leader of all this
mm-hmm.
signing off on all of this, which is crazy.
It's
crazy.
Insane.
I got to ask you this. Has the Aaron Judge and Shohei, like, magic over the last couple of weeks, has it drawn you back into baseball at all?
All rise. I was already tapped in because of the Giants.
Big Yankees guy?
The Yankees are my Knicks. I like the Yankees. I'm a Giants fan always, first and foremost, but I like the Yankees. So, yeah, I like Aaron Judge. I like Juan Soto. Now they got my boy Jazz Chisholm over there. I like what he does. You know, I like Stroman as well. I've always liked the Yankees. So, I mean, those two are incredible. Aaron Judge is out of this world, man. And really, I was looking yesterday. There are some races, some quote-unquote races for divisions and stuff like that. But the way baseball is set up now, September doesn't mean the same. It's kind of just, let's get to October, and that's going to be fantastic. I love playoff baseball.
Yeah, I can't wait. Yeah. It's going to be a ton of fun. What do you guys got coming up?
Man, just recapping the weekend. There was a lot that went on over the weekend. Sabonis's camp and some of the things he had to say. College football was back. I love that. I can't wait for this weekend. And the WNBA had one hell of a game on Sunday morning.
That was extremely entertaining.
Yeah.
Really good hoops out in Chicago. D'Lo and Casey are coming up next. James and I are done for today. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. Salute to everybody in the chatty house. Appreciate you guys today. Appreciate you bearing with me while I did a fantasy draft live on the air. that means a lot. D'Lo and Casey coming up next. James and I are back tomorrow at 10 a.m. Until then, drink water and be nice, people. Bye.